You are listening to KGO. I'm David Lazarus, Lazarus at Large from the San Francisco Chronicle, sitting in for Mr. Gene Burns this evening. Well, this hour is going to be a little bit scary, but this is really important stuff. Bird flu. You know, we had a whole flurry of news stories about bird flu last year, and then it sort of petered out, and maybe it's not quite on your radar screen anymore. It should be. Just this week, the World Health Organization confirmed Indonesia's 52nd case of human infection with the H5N1 avian influenza virus. That's bird flu to you and me. 40 of these infections in Indonesia have been fatal. Now, bird flu is spreading rapidly since it first turned up in 2003 in Asia. It's already gotten to Europe, the Middle East, Africa. Since the virus reemerged in Asia in 2003, outbreaks have been confirmed or in more than 48 countries and territories. Since the beginning of this year, more than 30 countries have reported outbreaks, in most cases involving wild birds such as swans. The virus has killed 131 people since 2003. That's according to the World Health Organization. Countries with confirmed human deaths are Azerbaijan, Cambodia, China, Egypt, Indonesia, Iraq, Thailand, Turkey, and Vietnam. In total, the virus is known to have infected 229 people since 2003, according to the World Health Organization. Most of those who have died have been children and young adults. And that's interesting, say the experts, because typically the flu goes after elderly people who are more susceptible to that. But they are seeing similarities between the people who are being afflicted by bird flu and the 50 million people who were laid low by the Spanish flu back in 1918, the last major pandemic that we faced. In fact, the World Bank came out just this week and estimated that if we had a pandemic of the scope of the 1918 Spanish flu, we could be looking at 70 million casualties worldwide and economic losses of as much as $2 trillion. 70 million people in the crosshairs if bird flu becomes more adept at spreading from human to human. Now, at the moment, most of the human infections have come from humans who handle birds. We haven't seen that much human-to-human contact yet, but the experts say it's just a matter of time before the H5N1 virus, as all viruses do, figures out a mutation so that it makes the vector from human to human easier. And once that happens, all hell will break loose. Joining me on the KGO Live Line is Regina Phelps. She runs a San Francisco firm called Emergency Management and Safety Solutions. She is an internationally recognized authority on pandemics in general and bird flu in specific. Regina, welcome to the show.
Yep.
Regina, you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, let me ask you right off the bat, bird flu hasn't really been a headline-grabbing story in recent months. Is there reason to think that we don't have to worry anymore?
Well, you know, I think it'd be nice if we thought we didn't have to worry anymore. But in reality, it is, as you mentioned in your opening comments, just a matter of time. And your statistics were very accurate about what the World Health Organization has recently stated. What they also recently released last week in a report was that we are naturally seeing a slight decrease right now in this sort of lull in the seasonal flu season, and that they expect the cases to ramp back up this fall.
And why would that be?
Well, generally, influenza happens to like cooler and colder climates overall. And so even though a pandemic would be like wildfire, as you mentioned in your opening comments, it's still, because it is more difficult to transmit, it still has a tendency to follow this sort of cooler weather, if you will. So right now we're not seeing much of it, but I do expect as the fall migration occurs and also with the return of cool weather in the northern hemisphere, you're going to see it come back.
Have we seen bird flu in North America?
No, we have not. Well, if you define bird flu, there's 144 kinds of influenza, which is all bird flus, but we have not seen the H5 H5N1, which is the one, of course, we're so concerned about. There has been other types of influenza in Canada and in the United States over the last 2 years, H9N1, H9N2, H7N1, H7N2.
Well, what's the deal with that? Are we just lucky, or are the infected birds just not making the long trek across the ocean?
Well, actually, you know, that's an interesting point. The primary vector of H5N1 is not migratory birds. It's actually domestic poultry. And migratory birds are kind of getting the bad rap, if you will. And let me explain briefly how that happens. Infected chickens or ducks, for example, contaminate soil. And that virus will live in the soil for about 30 days. And so what happens then is the migratory bird group drops into an area that had been infected, picks up the virus from the soil, then moves on, being infected but not knowing it, and then, of course, dying subsequently several days later.
Here in the Bay Area, we have, of course, a very diverse community. And in Chinatown, for instance, you can actually see live poultry in some of the stores. Is that a danger?
Well, when the H5N1 becomes common in domestic poultry in the United States, it will be a significant danger. And I would expect, as is planned, that those markets would be shut down, as would people who have domestic chickens in their backyard, which is pretty common, by the way.
All right, and I guess more common than I was expecting, but right now, if indeed the main vector is from people handling live poultry, and that's not a big going concern in the United States, right, is our biggest concern then, once this virus figures out how to go human to human, then we would expect it to come in, say, through an airport or something like that?
Exactly. I mean, we're not going to have, it would be unlikely for us to have it come to the United States from a chicken situation. However, having said that, there are cases of illegal smuggling of cockfighting chickens out of Mexico in particular that are concerned to the disease followers, if you will, from the Departments of Public Health. But primarily what we're looking at is it would come in from either airports, somebody traveling abroad who comes back into the United States and brings it with it.
And so right now what we're watching for then is the question of whether the human-to-human contact has become a serious threat or not.
Absolutely. And what the fact that we have 200-plus cases, 231 cases, many people will look at that and think, well, gosh, that's not very many. Well, I mean, statistically, it's not very many. But when you look at the incredible fatality of this disease, it's running around 57% of the people that become infected die. That was originally from a high when it first came out of around 75%. Now it's down to about 56%. But it does, as you mentioned in your comments as you started, it likes young people. 90% of everybody who dies with H5N1 is under the age of 39. So I guess if you're older than 40, you should be happy now, but it's a major issue, and it is exactly like the 1918 flu, and it creates what's called a cytokine storm, which is a counterintuitive response of the immune system. The better your immune system is when you're exposed to a highly lethal agent like the H5N1, your immune system goes into overdrive. So people that are young, in particular the major deaths are occurring between the ages of 20 and 21, 22, they have a good immune system, and so they really overcompensate and they die within a day or two.
All right, Regina Phelps, don't go anywhere. We're going to be taking your calls in just a few minutes. So if you have any questions for Regina Phelps about bird flu and what you should be doing, you want to call in. 808-0810 is our number, 808-0810. You're listening to KGO. Talking bird flu this hour. I'm David Lazarus, in for Gene Burns. We have on the live line Regina Phelps. She runs a firm called Emergency Management and Safety Solutions. She is an internationally recognized expert on pandemics and bird flu. Regina, how prepared are we in the United States right now for a bird flu pandemic?
Well, I think actually we're very poorly prepared, not only on the government side of the equation, but also in private business, as well as just families and homes in general.
Well, let's take that one at a time. I remember when this story first gained currency last year, we started hearing all these reports about Tamiflu and not having enough Tamiflu around, and President Bush weighed in, and it seemed like all the wheels of government were turning. Are you saying we really haven't covered a lot of ground?
Well, if you read the 327-page Bush pandemic plan, it says pretty much over and over again that the agency responsible for managing a pandemic in the United States is not the federal government, it's not the state government. It actually is local departments of public health.
Get out of here.
Totally. And the thing that's pretty scary about that is that, and this is not demeaning at all our departments of public health, because they are excellent in many, many parts of the country, but they are way overworked, way understaffed, and don't have the resources that they need in order to be able to manage this. And the federal government is not giving additional funding for this planning responsibility that has been thrust upon all of these local agencies.
And so all of the many, many ramifications of a pandemic, not just the public health, but also the public safety, the security aspects of it, are we saying that's going to be done by local authorities?
Correct.
Well, that seems insane.
Well, it is. And what you'll find is that you'll have some, you'll have incredible disproportionate of response across the United States. Every county would be responding potentially very differently. So from a perspective of a citizen or a business, you're not going to know what to expect from any given locale. And it will vary greatly. I've done work across the United States on this topic for the last 4 years in particular, and every time I interview a medical director from a local department of public health, many of them don't know exactly what they're going to do, because to be frank, we have not activated public health laws in the United States since the early 50s, which is when polio and tuberculosis were our last public health emergencies.
How are we looking in the Bay Area?
The Bay Area, I think, is a little bit of a mixed bag. I think there many of the counties are getting more prepared as they are putting more resources behind it. But again, I think for many of the agencies, it really is a resource-related issue.
Now, when you and I spoke in the past, we talked about how companies can be laying the groundwork to be ready for a possible pandemic, for instance, putting in the infrastructure for telecommuting, being able to handle meetings that aren't face-to-face. Have you seen much movement in terms of the corporate sector?
There's been a lot, especially in the last 90 days or so, and I think that's been driven by a couple of federal regulations. There was a letter that came out from the banking regulators about 60 days ago saying that banks needed to prepare a pandemic plan and document that and show that to auditors. So that sort of began to drive, if you will, the financial sectors, and then many of the sectors behind them have jumped right in. And many companies are reaching out to their key partners and vendors saying, what are you doing? Because we depend on you to service us, and if you're not ready, then we're not ready. And so that's also fueled more interest in the area of corporate pandemic planning.
And if we have runaway absenteeism as a result of a pandemic, that would ripple through the entire economy, wouldn't it?
Completely.
I mean, the entire supply chain gets cut off.
Completely. I mean, and if you begin to look at that, it's unnerving. Just think of how many organizations have either offshore different activities like call centers, or they have third-party vendors doing shipping for them or trucking. And so when you look at how it begins to impact a company, it's mind-boggling about supply chain issues, who they depend on to be able to support their products and services. And just think of the just-in-time delivery issues. When you go to the grocery store every day, those things are restocked every day from food that comes from someplace else. It's not in the back room.
And yet many companies have actually brought about policies in recent months of saying, we don't encourage telecommuting, we want to see bodies in the office.
Yes, which is counterintuitive, of course, to the whole pandemic issue.
To say the least.
Of course. And so what we've encouraged our clients is to really look at their employee population, look at their current business continuity plans, and say, who has to be at work, really has to be at work to run the business, know who those people are and plan for them to be at work safely, who can work remotely that's mission critical that you need to have running your business. And then, you know, then there's sort of the other employees that may not be able to work remotely or aren't really mission critical. You know, what do we do with those folks?
All right. We're talking to Regina Phelps, an expert on bird flu. We're going to take your calls next. 808-0810 is the number. 808-0810. You're listening to KGO. I'm David Lazarus in for Gene Burns. We're talking with Regina Phelps. She's the head of Emergency Management and Safety Solutions. She is a renowned expert on bird flu. We will get to your calls now. 808-0810 is our number. Mark in Half Moon Bay, welcome to KGO.
Yeah, hi. So let's say a bird flu pandemic actually takes hold in the United States and one becomes infected. Is there anything that that individual can do to reduce the probability that that infection will be lethal for them?
Regina Phelps?
That's a very good question. I think it really depends on a couple of different things. If you look at what's currently happening in this cytokine storm that I mentioned a little bit ago, this overactive immune system, if that indeed is that the case for that individual, there's not a lot they're going to be able to do. The most important thing I think you can do is just a couple of things. It's really more in the area of prevention initially, and that is really good hand washing, which sounds kind of lame as that being a major deterrent, but good hand washing, minimizing how much you touch your face because that's how you infect yourself. If you are sick at home, really isolate yourself from your other family members. Stay really well hydrated. Make sure that you have basic supplies in your home in order to be able to take care of yourself.
Such as what?
I'm talking the basics, food, water, and also cold remedies and those types of things that you might need to get because they'll be difficult to find later on. And the other thing is you might want to look at also really, again, educating and minimizing contact with anybody if you become ill. And the other thing is to get a flu shot every year. Even though the flu shot will not prevent you from getting the H5N1 disease, it would prevent you from potentially getting seasonal flu, which could then, you wouldn't know when you got the H5N1 whether you had a case of seasonal flu or you had the H5N1, and that could make a big difference for you. So that would be what I would suggest.
Mark, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Regina, a question there. I mean, how do you spot it as opposed to another form of flu? So if you start getting the sniffles, should you freak?
Well, that's going to be a major issue, of course. Once the pandemic begins in the world, if you begin to have flu-like symptoms, remember what those are. That's not a common cold. Severe flu symptoms are high fever, severe cough, a lot of chest congestion. This is not like a little nasal.
I get that every time I get sick.
Well, influenza is a type of illness that will lay you flat on your back for a good 5 to 6 days. It's not like a little cold. And so I think what's going to be a concern is that when a pandemic begins and people get a little sniffle, they're going to completely flip out, which is only going to make a bigger impact on our already overburdened healthcare system because people are going to want to panic and go to the doctor.
Boy, so you just can't win for losing around here. So if you try to step up and do something about it and be proactive, now you're going to be flooding the doctor's office, and they're not going to be able to deal with the actual cases.
Exactly right. And what's going to happen is that if you look at our healthcare system already in the United States, it's already at capacity in most communities. And so if we look at what a pandemic is going to do, it's going to send us completely over the top. And what you will find is that hospitals will be saying, unless you are critically ill, stay home and take care of yourself, which goes back to, does your family know how to take care of somebody who's ill? You know, knowing some basic kind of even nursing kind of skills, how to take somebody's temperature, how to make them comfortable if they're ill, making sure they stay well hydrated, make sure that you have basic supplies at home like food and other types of things, even electrolytes, so that, you know, like even Gatorade so that people can stay hydrated would be important.
All right, we're going to talk after the next break about what a pandemic would look like. We're going to take more of your calls. 808-0810 is our number, 808-0810. Hey, Kim Foster over in the newsroom, are you ready for bird flu?
No, she had some great advice. I need to stock up and put everything in my garage just in case.
And wash your hands.
Exactly.
What's going on?
South Korean media are reporting that North Korea has 3 or 4 more missiles on launch pads, and they say the South Korean defense minister is warning that further tests are possible. The missiles are said to be either short or medium range. Authorities say tomorrow they'll release diaries kept by the Columbine School gunmen and other documents seized from their homes and cars. The documents include messages Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold wrote to each other in yearbooks and a journal kept by Harris's father. And the U.S. population is rapidly approaching 300 million people. But the growth is producing headaches for Americans fed up with traffic congestion and sprawl. But Europe and Japan are on the verge of big population losses because of low birth rates. Time now to check traffic around the bay, see how things are moving this evening. KGO's Mike McDowd.
Thank you kindly. We're going to take a look at Healdsburg, southbound 101 at Old Redwood Highway. 2-vehicle crash. They're off to the right-hand shoulder. Another North Bay problem. Southbound 29 at 121. We have a truck and a sedan. Now the roadway is completely blocked there. Emergency crews are on scene. Getting word of a problem on the Altamont Pass eastbound 580 just before North Flynn. The two right lanes are blocked because of wood that has shut down those lanes, but CHP on the way to the scene to remove those. And Golden Gate Bridge at the speed limit in both directions. While at Shell, their gas lanes not only surpass government standards, they meet top quality autos' highest standards. Whether you own or lease your car, keep it running smooth. Shell, made to move. With the Bay Area's best traffic coverage, Mike McDowd, KGO Radio News.
Thank you, Mike. The KGO Lloyd Lindsay Young weather forecast for the Bay Area. Extensive fog and low clouds spreading over the bay tonight. Clear inland with lows in the 50s. Fog over the bay tomorrow morning. Otherwise sunny in the afternoon. Unseasonably cool, especially inland, high 60s around the bay. 75 to 80 degrees in the inland areas. I'm Kim Foster, KGO Radio News.
That's what we're going to talk about now. I'm David Lazarus, in for Gene Burns. We're talking bird flu with Regina Phelps, the head of Emergency Management and Safety Solutions. She is a renowned expert on pandemics. Regina, now, from my position as a responsible member of the mass media, I know it's my job to keep things calm and not so panic. But tell me, what would a pandemic look like?
Well, you know, it depends on how it was. If it was like 1918 versus 1968, it could be markedly different. And in your opening comments, you mentioned that there was one pandemic in the last century. In reality, there were three, 1918 being the most serious, 1957 being not too bad overall, and 1968 being darn right wimpy.
And in 1918, 50 million dead.
At least. I mean, many people believe it was 100, 125 million dead. If it was like that, what we would expect to see across the United States would be minimally 90 to 120 days of each wave of the pandemic being where we'd have widespread illness, deaths probably in the 1 or 2% of the population, closure of businesses, closure of schools.
What do our hospitals look like?
Hospitals would be in deep trouble. They would very much be unable to manage the overflow. They would not have sufficient intensive care unit beds nor ventilators to place people on. They would likely run out of drugs.
Would our doctors and nurses be succumbing to the illness?
Absolutely. And if you go back to 1918, in some communities, as many as 75% of the nurses and doctors were either ill or died.
What about quarantines?
Quarantines are a very controversial issue. If you look at the Departments of Public Health, which in my opening comments I mentioned how they are responsible for the response across the United States, they do have ultimate authority in what's called public health law, which is the most onerous law in the United States, makes the Patriot Act look like a wimp. They can essentially close any facility, control your movements, isolate you if you are...
Would we have quarantines?
You know, it's hard to say if we would, because how would we implement them?
I don't know, but how would you possibly fight a pandemic if you don't isolate communities?
Right, and that would be an issue. Who's going to be the military arm, if you will, to be able to enforce the quarantine? I think there'd be a certain amount of public policing themselves. If it's really bad and people are dying, I don't think people are going to want to go out. So that would be, we would self-limit ourselves in many cases.
And luckily, we've got a lot of National Guard around. Oh, no, we don't. They're all in another country.
Yes, we have a shortage of a variety of things, including military personnel. And if you look at the Bay Area in particular, we have no active bases here at all. So we don't even have that to be able to call back on. And you're right, the Guard has been deployed to other places around the world.
All right, 808-0810 is our number, 808-0810. Bonnie in Paso Robles, welcome to KGO.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
I was curious to know why we're focusing so much on the bird flu when, say, there's other things like West Nile virus, where I know a young fellow here in Paso Robles that had an unconfirmed case. Like, he was in and out of the hospital, and by the time they tested him, he was pretty much over it. But isn't that as much a danger as, say, bird flu?
That's a really good question.
And, Regina, it's worth pointing out that Contra Costa has just notified that it's had its first case of West Nile virus of the year.
Yes.
So it's there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's not to to put the emphasis on bird flu is not to demean other diseases like West Nile, but go back and think about influenza as an example. Influenza is a highly infectious respiratory disease spread by droplet nuclei. So when you speak or cough or talk, you're spraying out all these little pieces of moisture that are spreading diseases. West Nile is vector-driven, which means it's spread by mosquitoes. So you can mitigate your exposure to things like West Nile by wearing long sleeves, keeping your windows closed, or having screens on, wearing a bug repellent, where you can't stop a respiratory spread illness.
All right.
Totally different issue.
Bonnie, thank you very much for the call. Craig in Walnut Creek, welcome to KGO. Craig? All right, we lost Craig. Hopefully he has not succumbed to the illness. Mary in Sebastopol, welcome to KGO. Mary.
Hello. Thanks so much for talking about this. I'm a nurse, a retired RN, and I have a couple of questions. But first, if I could just add to the things that people need to have on hand in preparation is plenty of their own prescription medications.
Absolutely.
I think people often might forget that. I don't know what the poor Medi-Cal and people like that can only get 1 month at a time, what they're going to do, but anyway.
Yeah, but is it possible to stockpile medication like that?
Not if your insurance won't allow you to do that.
Yeah, so. Not if your insurance won't. Medi-Cal, you can only get limited of a month.
Regina, have you talked to the insurance companies? Are they amenable to this?
Currently, no.
Are they even aware of the problem?
There's been some effort to try and get people to, especially for Medicare or Medi-Cal patients who are restricted to 30-day supplies. Hopefully, they will modify this during the course of this disease outbreak as it ramps up.
But is that too late?
Could be, yes.
All right. What was your other point, Mary?
Yeah, my question, what type of masks will work? Do the ones that hospitals use, those blue, disposable
paper
masks, are those effective for the virus?
Very good question. I'm glad you asked that. There's basically, if you look at masks, when we think of a mask, there's basically two types. And many people that are listening in the audience will think of a surgical mask. And when you've watched a television program or you've been treated by a doctor, they'll be wearing a surgical mask. And when you look at that mask, it has openings on either side. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about why you wear a surgical mask, it's not to protect the person who's wearing it. It's to protect the person that you're working on.
Yes.
So a surgical mask will not help. The type of mask that is generally the approved mask is either an N like Nancy 95 or an N like Nancy 99. And what those numbers mean is that means it removes that much particulate matter from the air.
Where do you get these?
You can buy these at drugstores. You can also buy them at places like even Home Depot. Contractors wear them. However, let me just say to you, there's not enough of those masks in the universe for all to be wearing them. And so recently the CDC also came out with a study that you could actually turn, believe it or not, T-shirts into appropriate masks, and I actually have recently just put that on our website because it's almost impossible to find in the CDC website. But
that sounds like that old thing about getting some duct tape and keeping yourself safe from terrorists.
Well, it sounds kind of crazy, but the advantage of being able to give somebody something that they can actually do in their home, if they can't go to a store once it starts and there's no mask, what are you going to tell people to do?
All right, Mary, thank you very much for that call. 808-0810 is our number, 808-0810. You're listening to KGO. KGO, I'm David Lazarus, in for Gene Burns. We're talking with Regina Phelps of Emergency Management and Safety Solutions. She is a bird flu expert. Regina, during the break, I sneezed and almost freaked, thanks to you. And I'm wondering, my little momentary panic attack right there, it seems like the entire country, once bird flu becomes a going concern, is going to be doing that too.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what's going to happen is that, to sort of reflect on what will occur, is that currently right now we have six levels that lead us to a pandemic in the World Health Organization's pandemic alert levels. We're at level 3, which we've been at since 1997.
So that's kind of like status quo?
Yeah, and so we could be at a level 3 for a long time, but when we go to level 4, which means sustained a spread amongst small clusters, which would be small family groups, what you're going to see, I think, across the world is this incredible fear because the media will be all over it, of course.
No, and, not the media.
Yeah, and they're not going to know, people aren't going to know what it means. And so they're going to be a tremendous panic. And then I think it'll settle back down again. It'll panic again when we go to a 5 because people still won't know exactly what that means, which means now we have a large cluster to be like a small village or a town. And then when we go to a level 6, which means it's going to be a global pandemic, we have 18 months of a sustained illness that will have 3 waves. And the first wave will last 4 to 6 months. And at the end of that period of that first wave, we'll have no deaths anymore, no more illness. And people will think, oh, my gosh, it's all over. And then, no, it's not. Then we get ready for the next wave.
Do you, like, take Prozac every day?
No, you know, actually, because I'm trying to help people prepare, I'm actually happy. I mean, I'm good about this, but it freaks people out, I know.
Oh, yeah, you must be a fun date, I'll tell you. So, how was work? Oh, no, don't go there. Craig in Walnut Creek, welcome to KGO.
Hi, David.
Hey.
Regina, can you hear me okay?
We hear you.
Okay, last time I fell off. I have multiple sclerosis, and my immune system is really active.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Are there any thoughts about people like me with autoimmune diseases or anything like that? Are there,
And what about AIDS?
Absolutely, David. That's a very great question because there's diseases on both sides of the spectrum. An autoimmune disease which has an overactive immune response and contrasted somebody like HIV or AIDS or somebody who's on cancer therapy who has a suppressed immune system is going to be on the other side of that equation. I think what I would suggest for anybody who has a chronic illness or is having any sort of treatment is to really speak with your physician. Is there some type of medications they might be able to help you manage that? There's been some research about looking at some auto suppression of folks that have certain illnesses as far as different medications you might take. But then there are counterbalances to that as well. So I would encourage anyone with a chronic illness that's listening on either side of the immune system equation to really speak to their physician about what they should be thinking and doing so that they are well prepared.
Thank you for that call, Craig.
You guys are great.
Ah, thank you. 808-0810 is our number. Don in Antioch, welcome to KGO. Don?
Yeah, hi, gang.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, you know, it's my understanding that H5N1, as presently constituted, if you catch it from birds, has a mortality rate of between 50% and 70%. But if it mutates to human-to-human form, that mortality rate will typically dropping to between 1% and 3%. Is that true?
That is correct. I mean, actually, in that 1% and 3% is an unusual number. If you go back to 1918, which was the most dramatic pandemic that we know about, is that the death toll globally, depending on which numbers you look at, was between 1% and 2%. Currently, right now, it is 57%.
Death rate was 1% to 2%. We still looked at 50 million fatalities.
Yes.
So that means that an exponentially larger number of people actually had the illness.
Yes. Oh, I will make a guarantee to every one of your listeners, including yourself, David. At the end of our next pandemic, which will last 18 months, one of 3 things will happen to every person on this planet. It doesn't matter where you are. One thing that will happen is either you'll get sick and die, you'll get sick and get better, or 3, you'll have your immune system pinged enough that you'll develop an antibody response. You will not get sick, but if I was to check your blood at the end of the pandemic, you will indeed have produced an antibody response to the disease.
That's a good thing, though, right?
Yeah. And actually, you know, the thing to that I would encourage all listeners to think about this is that even if it's the most horrible pandemic in the universe and 2% of the population dies, which is huge, still that means 98% of us are going to live.
All right, Don, thank you very much for that call. You know, I wonder, Regina, when you talk about numbers of that magnitude, of basically everybody within the sound of my voice getting this illness, I mean, how can you even think of preparing?
Well, I think what I would encourage you is not to look at it from that kind of a magnitude. And the perspective of, again, it will last 18 months. You could never get ill. I mean, you could just essentially have an immune response to it and never get ill. But think about if you don't do anything. Think about it if you, just like from earthquake preparedness, if you never did anything, you'd be at the mercy of what was happening around you. I encourage all people to think about this, is there's so much you can do as far as, again, basic overall preparedness. and just ramp that up a little bit. A couple of weeks of food and water and medications that you have on hand, and understanding how to take care of somebody who's sick too. And that's really important, because most of us, you know, didn't go to nursing school like I did. Most of us don't understand how to take care of somebody who's sick. And if there's no medical care to do that, we're going to be taking care of ourselves.
All right, and I'm running out tomorrow and investing in the Kleenex Corporation. 808-0810 is our number. You're listening to KGO. Hey, pandemic be damned. If you're thinking about remodeling your kitchen or upgrading an appliance, then you need to visit the Gourmet Appliance Outlet. Gourmet Appliance specializes in providing name brands products like Fisher & Paykel at discount prices. Right now, there are unbelievable prices on closeout DCS ranges and range tops. Great deals on closeout Miele dishwashers. Big rebates on new Frigidaire Affinity Laundry plus 1 year free laundry detergent. You can't beat a deal like that. A new shipment of Bosch ovens, cooktops, and dishwashers are available at huge discounts. And just in time for grilling season is special pricing on the Big Green Egg Yow. Gourmet Appliance is also a dealer for LG Appliances, known for their innovative and top-quality products, such as the world's only refrigerator with a built-in TV. Boy, do I need one of those! Products do not last, so hurry today and call Jeff or Iggy at 510-635-5100 for an appointment. That's 510-635-5100. Or stop by any time, Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 4, located west off Highway 880 at 33 Hagenberger Court in Oakland. Gourmet Appliance Outlet, home of world-class products at down-to-earth prices. You're listening to KGO. I'm David Lazarus in for Gene Burns this evening. We're talking with Regina Phelps. She is a bird flu maven. She knows the score. 808-0810 is our number. Sheldon in Oakland, welcome to KGO.
David, great program. Listen,
thank you.
If this incompetent and corrupt administration is going to run a pandemic the way they run they ran Katrina, we're in deep doo-doo.
Yeah, that's not very encouraging, is it?
No, it isn't. And she's right. The hospitals and the emergency rooms would just be overflowing. But I want to ask her a few things. What about buying kosher chickens, poultry, meats, and what about the feed that goes into chicken, and does mad cow disease factor into this? Okay. I don't think my answer's off the air.
All right, thank you for the call, John. So does kosher make it kosher, or what?
Well, you know, I think the thing about poultry in general, and so again, beef is not an issue here because you're not going to get influenza from beef, but when you look at poultry in general, ducks and chickens, as long as you eat them and they are properly cooked, you cannot get ill. But again, I would say to you that most of us get, if you look at salmonella and E. coli and diseases like that that come from poorly prepared chicken and or poorly prepared eggs, that's a big concern. Mad cow disease, totally different issue, and the feed issue has nothing to do with influenza at all.
Hey, one thing I'm a little iffy on, Regina, we get Tamiflu, which is the big pandemic drug that we keep hearing about. Don't they incubate that in eggs?
No, actually, what they make vaccines in eggs. And so I'm glad you mentioned that. Tamiflu is an antiviral, and it's totally a different type of medication than a vaccine. It will not prevent you from getting the disease for a protracted period of time. With Tamiflu, you take it prophylactically, meaning if I am around you and you're sick and I'm not sick yet, I'm going to start taking Tamiflu, which I can take for 10 days.
But if we're going to have a vaccine, they make that in eggs.
They make that in eggs.
We get eggs from chickens.
And
this is bird flu. Okay, help me out here.
It's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it? The problem with vaccine production, of course, is it takes 8 to 10 months to make a vaccine. Vaccine is, and also vaccine production is embarrassingly hasn't changed since the 1950s. I mean, they still make it in eggs. How lame is that? There is cellular technology, but it's probably 5 to 10 years off from being able to actually produce a vaccine. So we can't make a vaccine until the diseases actually begin to spread human to human. So there are experimental H5N1 vaccines being made now, but they are not the vaccine. So from the time the pandemic starts, it'd be 8 to 10 months before vaccines are available. Currently, right now, the worldwide production capacity of vaccines are 300 million doses a year annually for the globe.
You are a fun date. Hey, Daniel on a cell phone in 880. Welcome to KGO. Daniel?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
What's going to happen to people who raise pigeons or keep exotic birds or people that own pet stores if this thing becomes a pandemic?
Are you out of your mind? You would raise pigeons with a bird flu?
Well, that's the question.
What are you, a maniac?
Yeah, I'm a maniac.
And that's a very good question. I think what you're going to find is that our departments of public health across the United States are already preparing ordinances and laws that would, first of all, prohibit domestic birds being kept in a backyard. So that would include pigeons and also domestic chickens and ducks. I think for the time being, domestic birds that are, an exotic bird, for example, inside a home would be speared. However, I would say to you, if things got bad, it would not be out of the realm of possibility that departments of public health would order them to be put to
death. All right, Daniel, thank you very much for that call. In our closing moments, Regina Phelps, should we be encouraged at least that we're talking about it?
I think we should be very encouraged that we're talking about it. And I also encourage the public not to think that just because it doesn't happen tomorrow that it's not going to happen. Influenza is a highly changeable disease, as you mentioned in your opening comments, and we will have a pandemic. All of us in the disease community know that. We're just a matter of time. And so I think what I'm concerned about is that the public will think, oh, gosh, it doesn't happen next week or next month, so therefore it's not going to occur. It is going to occur. We just don't know when, and we don't know how bad.
All right, Regina Phelps, thank you very much for that hour. And don't you go anywhere, friends. Next hour, our whole celebrity culture. We might not be wiped out yet by bird flu, but our celebrities are trying to do something about world problems. Are they making it worse or better? We'll find out. I'm David Lazarus. You're listening to KGO, San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland.
ABC News. I'm Brad Wheelis. President Bush says the way to solve the North Korean crisis is by diplomacy, but an agreement on sanctions may be hard to come by. China and Russia are against the idea, so it's still unclear whether the world will punish North Korea for launching 7 missiles in the past couple of days. ABC's Dan Harris reports from Seoul.
Here in South Korea, the government has threatened to cut off food to North Korea, but has not done so as of yet. The South Koreans may be less worried about a nuclear North Korea than an unstable North Korea. If Kim Jong-il's government were to fall, South Korea could be flooded with refugees. That attitude is reflected on the street, where there was one small protest, but most people told us they don't believe their northern neighbors would actually attack them.
Pyongyang has said any sanctions would amount to war. The U.S. does have a limited missile defense system, and General Henry Obering says it could take out a Taipodong 2 missile.
I am confident that we could hit a long-range missile that would be fired at the United States.
But it does not have a good track record, failing half the time during testing. One expert says it's like trying to hit a hole in one when the hole is moving 17,000 miles an hour. The man who may have direct insight into whether Barry Bonds used steroids refuses to talk. He's paying for it by spending time in federal prison. Here's ABC's Alex Stone.
Greg Anderson was held in contempt of court by a federal judge and sent directly to a prison outside San Francisco. He refused to testify in front of the grand jury investigating whether Barry Bonds lied under oath about his steroid use. There is growing speculation in the Bay Area that Bonds will be indicted sometime soon for tax evasion and perjury.
Anderson will be set free when the grand jury's term expires in the coming weeks. A look inside the minds of the Columbine killers. Authorities will release the diaries of Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris Thursday. ABC Money Scope, the Dow closed down 76 points. You're listening to ABC News.
Every year I get itchier and itchier.
Honey, you're going to scratch your skin off.
As we age, skin is more prone to itching. And boy, scratching can do real damage. New maximum strength lanacane penetrates skin twice as fast with powerful itch-stopping medicine. Plus an antibacterial helps kill germs. Ah, that's better.
I haven't seen digging like that since you put in the petunias.
New maximum strength lanacane stops the itch, saves your skin. Use only as directed.
Get out of debt and get on with your life. Agencies offering Care One credit counseling services can help. If you have $4, $6, $10,000 in credit card bills, find out how quickly your debt can be paid off. Callers save an average of 30% in payments every month. So gather your bills and call now for a personal debt analysis. Licensing details available. That's Care One Credit Counseling Services. 1-800-695-9092. That's 1-800-695-9092.
Even the FBI is vulnerable to hackers. Computer programs readily available on the Internet were used to crack the Bureau's classified computer system. A private consultant assigned to the FBI's Springfield, Illinois office managed to hack into computers four times, according to the Washington Post. Joseph Colon was able to get the passwords of 38,000 employees, including the FBI director. He pled guilty last March to four counts of intentionally accessing a computer. ADP, the company which issues payroll checks to one in six private sector workers in this country, is reporting a security breach. It's not within the payroll department, but another arm of the company. ABC News business editor Dan Arnall says a thief was able to obtain information by simply making a phone call.
ABC News has learned that ADP, one of the world's largest data service companies, was targeted by a data thief looking for information on investors. Between November 2005 and February 2006, ADP provided a scammer with names, addresses, and stock holding information on an undisclosed number of people who had purchased stock through major brokerages that use ADP's investor communication services.
The thief did not get a hold of account numbers or social security numbers. France advanced to the World Cup final by beating Portugal Wednesday 1-0. Celebrations immediately followed. France takes on Italy Sunday in Berlin. And police in that German city arrested two men accused of placing cement-filled soccer balls around Berlin and inviting people to kick them. This is ABC News.
They say the best things in life are free. So why are we paying so much for our basic information and entertainment needs? The average cable TV bill has more than doubled in the last 10 years. The price of movie tickets keeps going up. So exactly what is free today anyway? Well, you're listening to it. Local radio. Support the advertisers that support this radio station. And keep listening. We won't send you a bill. There are still some things you just shouldn't have to pay for.
Brad Wheatless, ABC News.
KGO Radio News Time 9:05. Good evening. I'm Kim Foster. Here's what's happening. Barry Bonds' personal trainer was held in contempt of court and ordered to prison today for refusing to testify to the federal grand jury investigating Bonds for perjury. Greg Anderson, who served 3 months in prison after pleading guilty last year for his role in the Balco scandal, was let out of court by two marshals. He will be housed at a federal prison near Dublin. Contra Costa County has its first case of West Nile virus this year. Officials say a dead bird found in Oakley tested positive for the virus this week. There were 11 human cases and 94 dead birds from the virus last year in the county. Statewide, there has been one human case and 45 dead birds so far this year. Most people who are bitten by a mosquito with West Nile virus won't get sick. About 20% will get West Nile fever, which is particularly dangerous for the elderly and people with weakened immune systems. And a doctor says studies